Oh, hi, Mark.
We go to the guest line, brought to you by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. 7 o'clock hour. I am Chris Ronji with you until 9 o'clock tonight. Bears play tonight in their final preseason game. No starters, though, so that means no Caleb. But we got Mark Grody with us. Loves Pearl Jam. I know where he's going to be next week, probably both nights. And we bring in Mark Grody now, who covers the Bears for 670 The Score. What's up, Mark?
Yes, there will be two Pearl Jam shows in my life, but my focus at this very moment, Chris, is can the Chicago Bears make it a perfect preseason? Can Matt Eberflus lead the Bears to 4-0 in the pre?
You don't care.
No, I do. I care so much. Check this out, Ronji.
Just
on the preseason as it is, going for 4-0 and giving it some meaning. So I have found that sometimes the best previews for NFL games are some of the gambling websites or those that are writing about that angle. And I did get this little nugget today in reading one of those. The Bears, I mean, I probably could have done this myself, but it was brought out and shined to my eyes. The Bears in this preseason have outscored their last two opponents 44-3 in the second half. Bears are money in the second half of preseason games.
Well, that's something. I mean, of course, you're talking about second and third stringers against other teams, second and third stringers, but at least that's good.
Yeah. I mean, it's something if you like those kinds of things. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, well, I know that it is preseason, and it doesn't necessarily predict what will happen in the regular season, but the guy who's not playing tonight, Caleb Williams, and the starters are not going to play, so maybe there's a little less intrigue for the more casual fan who would have been tuning in just specifically to see him out there. Let's now assess his preseason. It's over. There's still practice to go because we're a couple of weeks away at least from his debut. So what do you think of him so far through practice and all of the preseason?
I think that he looked a lot like Pat Mahomes Pat Mahomes. I'm thinking about Caleb Williams. He looked like a lot of Caleb Williams, USC. We saw a lot of the stuff that he was able to do there to make a name for himself. We also saw a lot of mistakes from the rookie quarterback. I mean, there was a decent – I mean, it's still amazing to me how well Caleb Williams has played in the preseason games that he was allowed to play in, just because, I mean, I don't know that there has been a day, Chris, in training camp where I could honestly walk away and say, yes, the offense got the better of the defense. Now, in all of those practices, seemingly every one that I've watched, even if the defense has won the day, I'll just say Caleb Williams wins the play. He always has the most shiny play of any practice, and he does, you know, elite superstar stuff on maybe one or two throws per practice. I don't have to tell you or our audience about the big-time throws that he has made in the last 2 weeks. So as I've been saying and coming to the realization, I think that we are seeing, for better or for worse, what we're going to see from Caleb Williams once the regular season starts in a few weeks, that you're going to see a quarterback who's going to do some great things, but he's also going to make mistakes. He's going to probably throw some interceptions. He's probably going to make some throws that you're going to be like, what the hell was that? So I think that we're going to have to live with some stuff to get to the big-time plays, just like we have so far in the preseason games and in training camp.
I will get to a little bit later in the show. Sean King was on with Bernstein and Holmes show earlier today, talking about Caleb in the pocket, and the way he was talking about him, it sounded very familiar to Justin Fields. He wasn't. He still likes Caleb as a prospect, but isn't as high on him as right now, anyway, as maybe the rest of us are. So as you see him, Caleb in the pocket versus him trying to get out of the pocket to make a play, how different is it in your mind from Fields? And is he good enough? Is he too skittish when it comes to being inside the pocket?
Yeah, I actually heard Sean King today. Man, did he go against the grain? And
yeah, very much.
What I heard, what stood out to me was him saying that the vision is not there for Caleb Williams. That in other words, he's not seeing the field. And I have to disagree with Sean King, the former quarterback. I know him from his Tampa Bay days, and probably most people do, and I respect the man. But from that I can't buy. Like, when you see him scrambling or looking, you know, dancing in the pocket and then finding guys downfield, not the outlet guys, but downfield, that says vision to me. I'd love to know a little bit more. I'd love to sit down with Sean King and have him show me the tape and, you know, like, circle the spots where he's not seeing the field, because my eyes say that while he's not perfect at seeing the field, he is seeing the field. Now, I will say this, that, yeah, we haven't seen as much of the actual playmaking or the running of the offense just behind center for Caleb Williams. Like, there has not been a ton of that. Most of his big plays have been, you know, rollout, bootleg, broken play. That's for sure. I do think you will see him a lot more in the pocket once the regular season starts, because obviously you'll see a full four quarters of him, and eventually it's going to even out. But I admit, like, that is probably, and early on, again, Shane Waldron, the offensive coordinator, trying to make sure that he does everything he has to do to make this quarterback comfortable. And if it's him being out of the pocket for a little while or doing that more than not early on, then I think that that's okay. This is a rookie quarterback still, so I think that there's a certain amount of comfort that he has when he gets to use his legs.
Okay, so that's the issue, is I get the sense that Fields, and maybe this is just straight projection, was a little timid in the pocket, maybe a little skittish when it comes to that. The way Caleb Williams presents himself, though, it is as somebody who is supremely confident. He even said, and it was picked up on Hard Knocks, and it could have been for the camera, but he said, I don't get nervous. I got nervous the first game at USC. I don't get nervous. Okay, so if that's true, then that would mean that him bailing out of the pocket isn't because he's nervous or he's skittish, right?
Yeah, I mean, are you talking about Justin doing that? Are you talking about Caleb?
No, talking about Caleb here.
Yeah, when he jumps up. Well, I mean, there's probably some plausibility to that, and that he may be panicking a little bit early when he starts to do his dance. But the thing is, and this is why it's ironic that Sean King was talking about the vision, that he still keeps his eyes downfield and he's looking to make a play. The difference with Justin Fields is that he would, once that first read didn't look good to him, he would, more times than not, he would bail out, take off, go the outlet route. He did not see the field, at least, and you asked the question, like, to this point in training camp and in the football lives of Justin Fields, who is better at this point? And yes, it Caleb Williams has been better than Justin Fields to this point. Now, a big part of that, too, it has been the quick release of Caleb Williams, and again, allowing to go to himself, to go to a second option, which, you know, I remember talking to Justin Fields last year, or asking a question with a group of reporters and saying, you know, did you feel like you took off too much in that 2022 season where he did incredible stuff? And he said, his answer was, and I'm paraphrasing, but I'm pretty close here on it, you know, he said that most of the time he should not have taken off, that sometimes he took off and he didn't even know why he was doing it. So I think that the discipline that Caleb has showed in staying home is ahead of where Justin Fields was, and something that still needs work, but good at this point.
So we had a caller just a little bit ago who was expressing concern that in Hard Knocks, the extended conversations that he saw, and this was more the last episode, that Caleb had with a coach, it was Eberflus, instead of one of the offensive coaches, whether it's Waldron, quarterback's coach, whatever. And he asked, is it because of that's just what they're showing here, or is that really what's going on? And I get where he's coming from, because Flus is defensive minded, and I guess there are some people out there that don't want him touching the quarterback. Let the offensive guys handle him.
Yeah.
So can you reassure Dominic that the offensive coaches are the ones who primarily are working with Caleb Williams?
What I can tell you is that under Justin Fields, Matt Eberflus pretty much stayed out of it, stayed out of the offensive meetings, and allowed. And as some fans are like, "Oh, wait a minute, that, you know, maybe this is the bad idea." Then, you know, let Luke Getsy do what he wanted to do. So I'm thinking that, yeah, that Shane Waldron probably has the closest relationship with Justin Fields and works with him the most. I believe that to be true. However, I got to tell you, man, like, I did the training camp live show last night, and topic number one for me was what that person was saying, was that it seems like Hard Knocks has gone out of their way, and maybe this is at the Bears' request, to show Matt Eberflus with Caleb Williams one-on-one a lot and give the appearance that Matt Eberflus is the one molding this kid, and which, of course, the head coach, he is going to do some of that, but for whatever reason, and maybe it's to bring some respect back to Matt Eberflus, maybe that's the angle the Bears are taking, because we know that Matt Eberflus has gotten knocked around a lot in the first 2 years. A lot of people thought that he shouldn't be back, so I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that the Bears, or, I don't know, maybe HBO and Hard Knocks and NFL Films want to show Eberflus in a different light, and that is him actually attempting to coach and coach Caleb. But I don't buy it. It's going to be Shane Waldron that's going to have the biggest influence on this quarterback.
We've got Mark Grody with us. He covers the Bears for 670 The Score. So what is the most important thing tonight?
There's a couple areas, I think. I think maybe watching the defensive line closely. I think that Austin Booker is going to make this team, but let's see if he continues to shine. Can Keith Randolph Jr., the kid from Illinois, does he have a shot to make this team? Daniel Hardy has been really good in the preseason. Can he overtake a spot? Dominic Robinson, third-year drafted Bear from, again, a few years ago, is it last call for him? So I'm really interested in seeing who thrives on the defensive line tonight and what the numbers game ends up being for those guys. And then I think the other, I mean, I got interest in all these positions, and we could talk about them all, Chris, but the other one that I'm fascinated by is the running back position. Are we going to see, I mean, it'll say a lot if you see Khalil Herbert out there, and probably not necessarily good for him, as in, could they potentially be shopping Khalil Herbert? Do they still need to see more from him? So I'm fascinated on that angle. And then the Travis Homer, Ian Wheeler, Velus Jones triumvirate. Like, I think Homer's good. The Ian Wheeler thing versus Velus Jones, I think, is a Hard Knocks topic, but I actually think that that's a real deal. Like, if it really is, then you 100% if you want to keep an extra running back, it cannot be Velus Jones Jr. Ian Wheeler's okay, got to be the guy.
That was going to be my question, because we did have a texter on him earlier. Does he make the team?
Oh man, does he make the team? I mean, I always look at it as these, like, a guy like him, like Velus Jones Jr., who has not been very good in his career. The one thing about him is that he has crazy good, you know, raw talent, and he's cheap. That's the real part right there. If I had to say yes or no, though, on Velus Jones Jr., I'd say no. I don't think he's going to make this team. Honestly, I think that the first game, or 2 games ago, what was that, against Buffalo, or was Buffalo?
Buffalo.
Yeah, it was Buffalo.
Buffalo.
And then
Tutanka.
Tutanka.
I'm glad you knew what I was talking about.
Yeah, you would have been in real trouble if
I actually cannot hear the word Buffalo without thinking Buffalo. I can't.
It's pretty good, actually.
What a, right?
Just the way you say Buffalo. Buffalo.
Anything that has it. Look, I am so good at that, and I'm also good at Buffalo Bill from Silence of the Lambs. Anything to do with Buffalo, I'm great at.
Oh, wait. Give us a little.
Oh, yeah? You want to hear it now?
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, wait. She a great big fat person.
Well, and let me be Jodie Foster. Okay, wait, do it again, and then I'll be Jodie Foster right after you. Okay, go.
Mrs. Lippman. Oh, wait. Is she a great big fat person?
Yeah, she's a big girl, sir. Freeze! Freeze! She's a big girl,
why do you,
sir.
Why do you let him go back and get... Come on, shoot him.
I like when he goes, did they ever find that guy? And she's like, okay, now something's up. And he's just so uncomfortable. Freeze!
Police around here don't seem to have the first clue.
That's it. He's trying to make small talk. I'm about to tell you, sir.
I just, the light in his eyes when he thinks, oh, it's the fat girl. Oh, oh, that is.
Oh, great big fat person. Yeah, she's a big girl, sir. Big girl.
She's a big girl, sir.
We got to take that to the stage. Hey, once Stephen Colbert gets out of town, man, I think you and I at the theater, baby. Two-man act.
Is he playing at the theater right now?
I think either The Daily Show or I know Colbert is in town. I'm not sure exactly where he's broadcasting from, but he's here. He's here.
He is.
Yes.
I saw him recording a thing with AOC. And I just, you know what? Somebody just sent me, somebody I work with in St. Louis, just sent me a video of all of the governors, not all of them, but some of the governors trying Malort with Pritzker.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Did a little video.
That's pretty sick.
Were we talking about something?
Oh,
Bears,
yeah. Bears running backs. Buffalo. Pre-game game. Who were we talking? Oh, we were talking about Velus Jones Jr.
Yeah,
I think, look, Velus Jones Jr., he made like in that game where he had a couple nice runs, had a touchdown run, he also made like three mistakes. He muffed a kickoff that day. He tripped over the quarterback on a handoff and then it's good that he just secured the football, but there was like nobody coming to him. He could have gotten up and run and ran. On the first handoff to him, it was a penalty on the defense, but he dropped the ball. Now, I don't know if he did that because he knew the play was dead, but like the Bears have to be looking at this and just shaking their heads going, man, it's still not there. And it sucks because, yes, he's a really talented guy. Everybody knows, like, if you're watching Hard Knocks or listening to him talk about his ferret, he's a great guy. He's such a good kid, but it's just not there.
Buddy, I appreciate it as always. We have to let you go. We've kept you a little bit too long, and we thank you for all of your service.
Okay, sir. We'll talk to you later.
See ya.
Bye, Chris.
Mark Grody covers the Bears for 670 The Score in Chicago, and even though the game's going to happen tonight and we are on during the game, you can still be listening in. You should. To me, Chris Ranji, with you until 9 o'clock, but we're going to talk a little bit of Cubs when we come back. Tony Andracki with Marquee Sports Network will join us next on The Score.
Amaya wearing bright red batting gloves on each hand. The pitch to Miguel. A swing and a drive. Deep left field. It's got a chance. Grand slam home run for Miguel Amaya.
We're back with host Chris Ranji on The Score.
Cubs really put it on the Tigers this afternoon at Wrigley Field. 10-2 was the final, which makes the Cubs a 2 games under .500 team at third in the National League Central. Or 5 games out of a wild card right now. I am Chris Ranji, hanging out with you until 9 o'clock tonight. And even though the Bears game is ongoing, we're still going to talk Bears. It's look, starters aren't playing tonight. Now, who cares? Who cares? I mean, I care a little bit, but we will get back to them. I promise you that. We're also going to talk a little Sox tonight because that hasn't happened in a while for me. So thought we'd get to that a little bit later on in the 8 o'clock hour. Right now, time to talk Cubs. Tony Andracki from Marquee Sports Network joins us here. He is the digital content manager and the Cubs reporter for the network. And Tony is with us now. You can follow him on Twitter at TonyAndracki23. What's going on, Tony?
Hey, Chris. How's it going?
Hey, man, we're doing okay. So this was a good showing by the Cubs today, who are still in this strange position where I guess a quite a few teams are actually in the National League. I mean, five games out isn't ideal as you get toward the end of August, but you're still there in striking distance for a playoff spot. And every one of these wins, I don't know, how do they feel? Do they feel as if they are in this thing still?
They do, for sure. Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think they understand everything that you just said, right? That, you know, the unlikely aspect of this all, that I think it was like, you know, right around 4%. They've kind of been hovering around the like 3-5% playoff odds for a little bit here, occasionally jumping up all the way to like 7 or 8%. So it's, you know, it's not particularly likely, of course, the math says, but the players in the clubhouse, you know, they understand that there's, as we're talking here, you know, about 5.5 weeks left in the season. Like you said, five games back, you know, they feel like they can do that, especially when you look at the schedule. And, you know, they've won 4 out of 5 series in August here. You know, they've been playing well. But I think it's, to be honest, to get into that race, they're going to have to do more than just take 2 of 3 from some of these teams. They're going to have to pull off some sweeps, and they're going to have to really kind of go on a run, like a 4, 6, 7 game win streak, you know, is something that's going to kind of have to happen on a somewhat regular basis if they're going to get back into this because of all the teams ahead of them in the standings.
Especially they'll have to do that against a team like they'll play tomorrow. You've got to do it against the Marlins. They are a bad, bad baseball team.
Yeah, for sure. And then they took care of business against the White Sox. It wasn't the prettiest always. You know, those were some pretty close games and took some comebacks at a couple games at Wrigley and, you know, some close games even late on the South Side a few weeks ago. But yet they won all 4 of those games. But you're exactly right. Like at this point, if you want to be a playoff team as the Cubs, you have to beat the teams you're supposed to beat. And that includes teams like the Marlins. And I mean, that's what I'm saying, you know, shaping up. It's always difficult to go on the road. It's difficult to sweep in the big leagues. But if the Cubs really, really want to get back into this and be players, they have to pull off a sweep. And what better time to do it than, you know, against one of the worst teams in baseball, one of the 3 worst teams in baseball.
Miguel Amaya, we played the highlights from Pat Hughes, who called the grand slam today. That pretty much put it out of reach. In terms of long term, when it comes to Amaya, what is his place in the organization?
It's a good question, and I think it's one they're still trying to answer. And I think his recent play the last probably about almost 2 months or, you know, 6 to 7 weeks here has changed things, I would say, a little bit. And the previous 3 months kind of changed things the other way. They came into this year feeling really confident about him and his place in the future. And, you know, Yan Gomes coming back, like they really like their catching tandem. Obviously it started working out where Amaya was playing 60-65% of the time, 70% of the time. And then, you know, they parted ways with Gomes and figured something out with Nito and now Bethancourt back there. But Amaya's still playing a bunch. You know, he's played all 3 games against the Blue Jays. You know, he's played a couple games here, like you said, had the big home run, and he's been hitting really well. And that's a big sign because that offense just wasn't there for the first 3 months of the season. So, you know, but they really like what he's done defensively. They love how he works with the pitching staff, how, you know, he's a good framer, his throwing and, you know, throwing out base runners still needs some work for sure, but it's also a really young catcher who, because of injuries and the pandemic and all that, has just not had a ton of experience catching. So I think it's a really interesting question, but I think it's one that they're going to have to like go out and get a veteran catcher this winter, somebody that kind of sticks around long-term. But I do think Amaya is at least part of the short-term picture at catcher and then possibly can carve out a long-term role for himself.
Tony Andracki covers the Cubs for Marquee Sports Network, is with us on 670 The Score. Pete Crow Armstrong had an extra base hit, a couple of RBIs on a double that happened in the game today. And while you don't really expect him, I mean, at least for me, I don't long-term think he's going to be much of a power presence. He should have some extra base hit ability because of his speed. As you look at him long-term, what kind of player do you ultimately expect he's going to be?
Yeah, I think he's going to be a guy that's going to be a high war player, and he's going to be a guy that you kind of, honestly, maybe even a little bit like a Dansby, where when you watch him every day, you kind of understand the value that he brings because of that glove and, like you said, the base running and the speed on the base pass. And I think that's the value overall. Like, that's the floor for him, is he can play elite defense. Maybe he's not quite at the elite level, but he will be there. And then he's an elite base runner. He's one of the fastest guys in baseball. You know, he just got caught recently on, you know, on a pickoff, so not really even on a steal attempt. So he's still 100% on that in the season. And yeah, he can really fly when he gets on the bases. Like even that double to left center today, he was thinking three and kind of had to pull up and stay at second. So, but I do think the power is going to come. It was there in the minors. The Cubs feel pretty confident in it. I'm not saying he's going to be a 30-40 home run a year guy, but I think, you know, 15 to 20 is very reasonable. And so, you know, 10 triples maybe with his speed too. So I think he's a guy that's probably not going to walk a ton, but, you know, have decent slugging and decent average and then provide a lot of value with defense in his glove.
So how do they handle the, as best as you can tell, I mean, what they're going to do for the rest of the year in terms of their closer?
Well, first up was Porter Hodge after the Neris move. But even before that, when Neris blew the save on Friday and was not necessarily down, but they wanted to stay away from him after throwing like 35 pitches on Friday. So Saturday comes along and save situation in the ninth, Jorge Lopez gets the call. Ultimately, I think Lopez will probably get a lot of the opportunities. He's a guy that has the experience back there and, you know, has the veteran status, has been pitching really, really well for the Cubs. Former All-Star as well as a reliever. So I think he might make the most sense, but I think Porter Hodge also makes a ton of sense because he's been about as impressive as any single like lone player in the Cubs organization this year from start to finish, just what he's done, how he's developed, you know, how he kind of just put himself on the radar and then now is getting save opportunities. And it's basically their top leverage arm, whether it's in the seventh inning or the ninth inning. So I think it's going to be maybe those two guys, but for the most part, Council will probably mix and match a bit.
What do you think of this this playoff race? I mean, just bigger picture here for 2024 and being where they are in the wild card. And I look at the other teams, and with the exception of the Braves, who I think are really, really good, I don't know how much the other teams, the Mets, the Giants, they're good. I don't know that they are so good that they prevent any kind of movement here. Is there a team that other than the Braves that really concerns you?
No, I mean, I think I would answer the Padres and the Diamondbacks, but they're above the Braves. So
they're already, yeah.
Yeah. So outside of that, no, I don't think so. I mean, I think the Cardinals, the Reds, and, you know, the Pirates have fallen off quite a bit lately here too. So I think, yeah, of the teams, you know, in front of them, like the Giants don't really scare me if I'm the Cubs, and the Mets have, you know, they've had a couple walk-offs and stuff this week. They seem pretty solid, but just with some of the pitching injuries and question marks that they have, it doesn't feel like a team that's destined for the playoffs. But, you know, the Braves have also had a ton of injuries, like Acuna and others, Spencer Strider, who, you know, they've had a mix and match all year. So it's going to be an interesting race. I ultimately think the Braves will probably, like, win that out just from their experience and their skill and talent level and also just being in the position that they're in because, you know, when you're entering September, like you want to be in the position that's in the playoff spot right now.
How much will the way they finish determine how they approach the offseason? Meaning if they get into the playoffs or they don't get into the playoffs, how much does that inform what happens when the season's over?
It's a good question. Ultimately, I don't think it really matters that much, if that makes any sense. I think, like, no matter what, this year is probably a little bit of a disappointment, even if they go on this great run in the next 5 weeks and make the playoffs, because they expected more. They expected more out of some of their players. They expected more out of the whole of the team. You know, the starting pitching has been really good all year. They've really put the bullpen together nicely here. But the offense is just, it's gone, you know, away at a bunch of times. It's just completely disappeared at times. And today was a really good performance from them, but for the previous week, they had struggled offensively, and we saw it for 2 months in May and June as well. So I think that's the main area that they'll have to focus on is the offense, and what they do there, I don't really know, because almost everybody's under contract, and where they improve or try to upgrade at positions, I don't really know. You know, I think the Bellinger question mark is a huge question they will need to answer in the offseason. Does he opt out? Does he come back? And if not, you know, if he doesn't come back, like, how do you replace him in the lineup? So I don't know. It's just interesting. But essentially, this will probably be 2 years now where they've underwhelmed or underperformed a bit from what they were expecting and what they were thinking going into the season.
What do you think they need?
Power. It's probably the number one answer. You know, I think they feel really good about pitching, especially considering how well they've pitched with injuries to Benton Brown and Jordan Wicks and Hayden Wesneski and, you know, a lot of these guys that like are young pitchers that are on the rise and people are talking about for the future. And when everybody was like, oh yeah, trade Jameson Taillon because we have all these young guys. Well, yeah, we have all these young guys that, like, you know, you have them and they're injured and they're on the IL and they haven't proven it and they haven't pitched over a big season or a full big league season. But that being said, they've still pitched really well. And so I think they feel really confident about their depth pitching wise. They feel confident about their ability to build a bullpen on the fly. You know, their goal is certainly to do that for 6 months. But I think really it just comes back to power. I think they had, the one homer today. And so I think they have, like, I heard a stat today. I might butcher this a bit. But since the All-Star break, the Cubs have, like, 32 homers as a team, and Aaron Judge has 15 or 16. So it's like that's what they need. They need power, and they need a star-level bat because Seiya is nice and Happ is nice and Bush and Bellinger. Like, these are good players, but they need, like, a star-level bat, and I just don't think they have that right now. I mean, Bellinger was for a time last year, but yeah.
Yeah. And you're right, but what we know is they're going to have to pay for it if they want it. Will they pay for it? And because we know that's a premium.
Yeah, and there's so few of those guys out there that are going to be available, right? Like, we know Juan Soto will be available, but what does that contract mean? You know, does he just go back to the Yankees? I don't know. And it's going to be interesting for sure. But yeah, absolutely. They need to find ways to, you know, develop the power internally with some of their young players and find a way to get more out of some of these guys. Like, I don't think they anticipated that Dansby Swanson would have 10 homers at this point in the year. Nico Horner would have 4 or 5 or whatever he was at. You know, not that they're expecting those guys to be 30 homer guys, but the power's just been down kind of, it's been down around baseball for sure, but it's been down in this Cubs lineup. Absolutely.
Can you see them paying, you know, doing a $500 million contract?
I don't know.
I mean, it seems like they should be able to.
Yeah, I would think that they should be able to as well. I thought maybe they would for Shohei. I don't know exactly what the contract, you know, that they were offering, you know, out there. Certainly the $700 million that the Dodgers threw out there was crazy. But yeah, I mean, I think they should be able to. You know, it's something that would make a lot of sense with this organization. But I think it also depends on a lot of other things. Like we said, if Bellinger comes back, that's a little bit harder to do. You know, a $500 million contract for next year. They're already going to be at the luxury tax this year. So it's an interesting question. At some point, probably they will. But is it this offseason? I don't know.
They did say, if it was not last week, it was the week before, that they are not, and I think it was Carter Hawkins who said it on The Score, that they're not beholden necessarily to the luxury tax, the competitive balance tax. Do you think that is something they do worry about for next year?
It's probably something they worry about for sure, but I don't know that they can really do anything about it now. You know, that what the Angels did last year was interesting, but yeah, I think it's something they worry about. You know, I think I don't know for sure, but my guess is, you know, they'd be fine going over it, and if it meant, you know, going for a push for the playoffs. And just hasn't worked out this year, of course, or as of yet. Like, you know, things can change in the final 5 weeks. But, I mean, I think they worry about it. They focus on it.
Okay. Tony Andracki, appreciate your time on a Thursday night. We will talk again soon. So thanks for being with us.
Sounds good. Thanks, buddy.
Tony Andracki, he covers the Cubs and digital content manager for Marquee Sports Network. He's on Twitter at Tony Andracki 23. I am Chris Ranji, and a little over halfway through with you tonight. I'm hanging out with you until 9 o'clock. We will talk some Sox in the next hour for old time's sake. Why not? Ryan McGuffey is going to join the show for a little bit. And I know the Bears are playing, but I mean, it's not the starting guys. Caleb's not out there. For the Chiefs, Pat isn't out there. Mahomes, you may have heard of him. He's not playing. So we're going to, it's still open for Bears talk. Okay. You want to talk Bears with me until 9 o'clock? You can. In fact, the phone lines are open. 312-644-6767 is the phone number to join us. And I posed this question earlier at the top of the show, wondering if I am being unreasonable or selfish or both or whatever. It's a very good possibility the Bears have found their guy. They have finally found a truly great quarterback. It's not 100% sure, of course, but it looks like they may have that person. A lot to be determined. I get it. But I almost feel like with him being here, I kind of want it just to be us. And what I mean is, I'm looking around the league at some of the other rookie quarterbacks that have been impressive during the preseason, like Jaden Daniels and Bo Nix, and maybe Drake May is going to be the Patriots starter. Nix is was named the Broncos starter. So you've got these guys who are all appearing to be really good. And I'm sitting here thinking, come on, man. I just want it to be us. How can we finally get a guy? Can't it just be all about us and Caleb Williams and the Bears? Why can't we just have this? Why does the party have to be extended to all these other teams? I don't think it's fair. I want to be selfish. I don't want them to have a good quarterback. I want it to just be us. Is that stupid? 312-644-6767. The phone line open for calls and for text messages. I'm Chris Ranji, hanging out on The Score.
And now the 1-1 pitch. Hayward hits a drive into right field. It's got a chance. Cubs win the ball game. Game-winning three-run homer, Jason Hayward.
Maybe that's why they didn't need a right fielder. He was going to hit it out of the yard.
We're back with host Chris Ranji on The Score.
Cubs fans remember fondly Jason Hayward for the World Series he helped bring to Chicago. Struggled quite a bit with the team offensively. It was sad to hear that today the Dodgers have designated him for assignment, which means Chris Taylor is going to take his roster spot. So Hayward, 35 years old, ended up having a... I don't think his career is over just yet. I would imagine some team is going to pick him up, whether it's the Braves or whatever. Maybe he does go back to Atlanta for a little bit. That would be something. That would be really interesting if that's what ends up happening. But he was DFA'd. And as you may or may not know, Hector Neris, who was let go by the Cubs, he apparently is going to sign with the Houston Astros. Astros right now, wouldn't that just be perfect? Just absolutely perfect if he ends up with Houston and deals? Wouldn't it? Just seems like a thing that just absolutely would happen if he goes to Houston and pitches really, really well. They are in first place in the American League West. They got a 5-game lead there over the Mariners. That's what's happening. I'm Chris Ranji with you until 9 o'clock tonight. And I told you that we could still talk Bears, even though the game is going on. No Caleb tonight. No starters tonight. Tyson Bagent playing in the game. The Chiefs are not having their starters play either. So, you know, it's just one of those. But we're still going to have to wait a long time before we get to the regular season. We don't have to wait very long to get to a phone call. In fact, we do that now. The listener line brought to you by BetQL. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. Mike in Normal. Oh, that's where I used to hang out. What's going on, Mike?
Hello, Chris Ranji. How are
Hello,
you, sir?
Hello, Mike. I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Hey, I heard your take. And although I want to be selfish too, I think he's got to have some guys that are going to push him. You know, you got to have those foils. You got to have those guys that are going to make him better and push him to be better. You know, for Mahomes, it's kind of been Joe Burrow and guys like that. So I think having some of these other guys have some early success is going to be good for Caleb.
What about Jordan Love? How about that? Can we just we'll let Love be that guy?
Well, Love can be that guy, but he's already got a 3-year head start. So
that's
true. You know, I don't think the longevity, I mean, maybe he plays for 12, 15 years like Rodgers has, but we'll see.
Okay. Mike, I think that's an absolutely fair point, and I appreciate the phone call. I'll take it back. If it's an either or question, which I don't think it is, but let's just for the hypothetical say it is an either or. Either Jordan Love is really good or these other rookie quarterbacks are really good. Now I don't know which one to take. I think I would take the rookie quarterbacks. No, that's it. That's the answer. I can't believe that I even took a second to think about it. I would rather Love not be any good. I'd rather the division stink. You know, let the competition come from playing other great quarterbacks once or twice a year instead of, you know, having to play Jordan Love two times a year guaranteed. Yeah, that's it. That is exactly it. I hit on it. There you go. All those young quarterbacks, all those rookie quarterbacks can be really good along with Caleb Williams as long as Jordan Love stinks. I'm going to declare this right now, and you can come back and tell me I'm wrong in 5 months if I end up being wrong. I really want to say that Jordan Love isn't as good as his first, you know, full season. So maybe that's wishful thinking. Damn it. I think that's what it is. Anyway, tell me I'm wrong. 312-644-6767. The co-host of White Sox Talk podcast works for NBC Sports Chicago. His name is Ryan McGuffey. He is wonderful. And he's going to talk some White Sox with us. How about that? When we come back, we're going to talk to Guff, but still, Bears talk. We can do it even though the game is ongoing, and if anything extraordinary happens in the game with the twos or threes, we'll let you know about it. I'm Chris Ranji. Final hour next on The Score. Score.
And now the 1-1 pitch. Hayward hits a drive into right field. It's got a chance! Cubs win the ball game. Game-winning three-run homer, Jason Hayward.
Maybe that's why they didn't need a right fielder. He was going to hit it out of the yard.
We're back with host Chris Ranji on The Score.
Cubs fans remember fondly Jason Hayward for the World Series he helped bring to Chicago. Struggled quite a bit with the team offensively. It was sad to hear that today the Dodgers have designated him for assignment, which means Chris Taylor is going to take his roster spot. So Hayward, 35 years old, ended up having a... I don't think his career is over just yet. I would imagine some team is going to pick him up, whether it's the Braves or whatever. Maybe he does go back to Atlanta for a little bit. That would be something. That would be really interesting if that's what ends up happening. But he was DFA'd. And as you may or may not know, Hector Neris, who was let go by the Cubs, he apparently is going to sign with the Houston Astros. Astros right now, wouldn't that just be perfect? Just absolutely perfect if he ends up with Houston and deals? Wouldn't it? Just seems like a thing that just absolutely would happen if he goes to Houston and pitches really, really well. They are in first place in the American League West. They've got a 5-game lead there over the Mariners. That's what's happening. I'm Chris Ranji with you until 9 o'clock tonight. And I told you that we could still talk Bears, even though the game is going on. No Caleb tonight, no starters tonight. Tyson Bagent playing in the game. The Chiefs are not having their starters play either. So, you know, it's just one of those. But we're still going to have to wait a long time before we get to the regular season. We don't have to wait very long to get to a phone call. In fact, we do that now. The listener line brought to you by BetQL. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. Mike in Normal. Oh, that's where I used to hang out. What's going on, Mike?
Hello, Chris Ranji. How are
Hello,
you, sir?
Hello, Mike. I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Hey, I heard your take, and although I want to be selfish too, I think he's got to have some guys that are going to push him. You know, you got to have those foils. You got to have those guys that are going to make him better and push him to be better. You know, for Mahomes, it's kind of been Joe Burrow and guys like that. So I think having some of these other guys have some early success is going to be good for Caleb.
What about Jordan Love? How about that? Can we just... We'll let Love be that guy.
Well, Love can be that guy, but he's already got a 3-year head start. So
that's
You know, I don't think the longevity. I mean, maybe he plays for 12, 15 years like Rodgers has, but we'll see.
Okay, Mike, I think that's an absolutely fair point, and I appreciate the phone call. I kind of all right. Let me. I'll take it back. If it's an either or question, which I don't think it is, but let's just for the hypothetical say it is an either or. Either Jordan Love is really good or these other rookie quarterbacks are really good. Now I don't know which one to take. I think I would take the rookie quarterbacks. No, that's it. That's the answer. I can't believe that I even took a second to think about it. I would rather Love not be any good. I'd rather the division stink. You know, let the competition come from playing other great quarterbacks once or twice a year instead of, you know, having to play Jordan Love two times a year guaranteed. Yeah, that's it. That is exactly it. I hit on it. There you go. All those young quarterbacks, all those rookie quarterbacks can be really good along with Caleb Williams as long as Jordan Love stinks. I'm going to declare this right now, and you can come back and tell me I'm wrong in 5 months if I end up being wrong. I really want to say that Jordan Love isn't as good as his first, you know, full season. So maybe that's wishful thinking. Damn it. I think that's what it is. Anyway, tell me I'm wrong. 312-644-6767. The co-host of White Sox Talk podcast works for NBC Sports Chicago. His name is Ryan McGuffey. He is wonderful, and he's going to talk some White Sox with us. How about that? When we come back, we're going to talk to Guff, but still, Bears talk. We can do it even though the game is ongoing, and if anything extraordinary happens in the game with the twos or threes, we'll let you know about it. I'm Chris Ranji. Final hour next on The Score.